Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
We reached out again to our friends over at the Chicago, let me make sure I get the right title for this, the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. The expert on North Korea there is Carl Friedhoff, who's joined us before, and Carl is on line 8. Hey, Carl, it's John Williams. Welcome back to our show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. That's my overall assessment of what's happened today. Do you concur with that? Would you add to that in some way?
Well, I think, you know, this story about the ship, they're loading missiles onto the ship, I think we need to put that into context a little bit. That's a bit of a smaller story than the larger story of what's happening with these continued missile launches and the potential for a sixth nuclear test. So while that's kind of a small bit and perhaps is going to suggest that these larger tests are going to continue, and that's really where we need to focus. Yeah, it's not great when our president is doing something that he has criticized others for, but I'm not really sure how that really changes the calculus of the overall situation. The United Nations Security Council over the weekend passed a resolution that is going to impose tougher sanctions on North Korea. But again, we're going to have to wait and see of how effective those sanctions actually are.
Talk to me about those sanctions, $1 billion and hitting them in some industries that they've been able to make money on. Plus, as I understand there's a lot of North Koreans outside of North Korea who earn money and send it back into the country. $1 billion goes that way, and we're going to make it more difficult for that to happen, too.
Yeah, the overseas labor has been something that is ongoing. Some of my former colleagues did a big study on this several years ago. There are North Korean laborers that work in Russia, they work in China, they work in places like the Middle East and Africa, and all of that money basically is funneled directly back to the regime. Of course, the workers that are sent abroad are generally judged by the North Korean regime to be loyal, and therefore perhaps their loyalty is seen as unshakable. And so that's why they are able to go on some of these expeditions to work overseas. The sanctions themselves, they aim at coal, they aim at iron ore, they aim at lead, and it's all trying to make sure that North Korea cannot continue to make money from some of this trade, which can then be funneled back into its arms program. Of course, the question then arises of, well, if this is what's going on and we're trying to limit this money, how do we know it's going to the arms program, and how do we know it's not hurting the people, the common people of North Korea, you know, hurting their livelihoods,
right,
and causing even more suffering?
Well,
so I think the counterpoint to that,
sure,
is, you know, in the 90s, it was not the U.S. sanctions or international sanctions that led North Korea to have a famine. North Korea has chosen on its own to pursue its nuclear weapons program, and quite frankly, I think that's something we have to understand, is that North Korea has no trouble in harming its own.
Yeah, well, that's what we're told, that they'll have to make a tough decision. Will they continue to fund their military, or are they going to fund their people? And you're here to tell us, we think we already know the answer to that, but
I think they'll absolutely continue to fund their military, because they've shown time and time again that they have no regard for their own citizens. And I think as U.S. citizens and citizens in Europe or other places, you know, that's very hard for us to actually accept. But I think that's the reality.
Well, what option do we have? I mean, if nothing else, that foments a little rebellion, but you don't want to continue to participate in their economy. You're shy of military, you know, sort of intervention. This seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, the sanctions are, for now, I think they are the way to go. Again, we don't want to condone this kind of program, and we're trying to ward off others by showing them that there can be consequences. Now, so far, the consequences for North Korea have been relatively light. The idea that North Korea is the most sanctioned country in the world has been a myth for a long time. You know, the sanctions, if you compare those that we have on North Korea to what we had on Iran in the past, are much lighter. And it's really only now that the international community, including the United States, is really getting serious about putting these sanctions on North Korea and trying to make them work. Of course, the wild card is China. China has said that it's willing to pay the price for tougher sanctions on North Korea, but what they're actually going to do remains unclear. They may try to go around those sanctions, and in some ways, this looks like a win for China.
Let me ask you this. You said that the North Korean citizens are sent abroad, South Korea, China, Japan, Asia, wherever. They make money, they send it back into North Korea, and you said that money goes to the regime. not as taxes, but they send the bulk of the, what they earn back to the government, or sort of, I don't know, indentured servants going out into the globe and bringing money back in?
Essentially, that's the way it works. The workers, as far as I understand it, this is not my area of expertise, but having worked with the people who did a lot of research on this and have talked about it a lot, that essentially the workers don't have to remit anything, and they basically never see any of the pay anyway. So it's not like they get a paycheck and then they're required to then go to a bank and send a remittance back. The remittance is basically made government to government, and then those workers are then sent out. So there
Seriously?
Is no middleman, and that takes
That's even worse.
Out of the hands of the workers to control their money.
And what if, is this a possible scenario? So they've got some sort of, they have their Navy. It's out on the water. Our Navy's out there. They fire a shot at us. Maybe one of their missiles hits one of our boats. I wonder what would happen then. What? Where do you think that goes?
That is a very scary scenario to imagine, especially with the level of tension where it is right now. My general inclination is to say that something like that is not going to happen. One of the things we learned from North Korea, if you watch them over decades, how they've handled their situation, they are very good at knowing where the line is and not stepping over it. So I would expect that there may be low-level provocations, but I think they clearly know that any kind of provocation like that that's aimed at a U.S. ship would be way beyond the pale and would invite a response. Now, perhaps now they feel they're in a position to toe that line and perhaps try to step beyond it. And I don't want to get into hypotheticals, but I think all of the most recent calculations about what a conflict and potential escalation would look like in East Asia, they're all very, very bad.
Well, I think that's why Joe is calling in. Hey, Joe, you're on WGN. What was your question?
I'm more of a comment. I think this deal with North Korea is a case of do as I say, not as I do. And that's never a good policy. It just upsets people. We're telling them they can't have a weapon that we have. What happened to mutual assured destruction? It's worked with other countries, other nuclear countries for years. The fact they know that if they use a nuclear weapon against us, they'll be wiped off the face of the earth. So no one uses them. Why can't that work with North Korea?
Yeah, is that what's going on here, maybe, Carl?
Well, it can work with North Korea, and I think there's a good argument out there that it is working with North Korea. You know, North Korea hasn't used their weapons. No one has used their weapons, and North Korea understands that there are certain types of provocations and kinetic actions that will invite an overwhelming response from the United States. However, you know, that only involves using weapons, and, you know, as I've often said, that the power for North Korea is in having the weapons, perhaps not in using them. It's trying to assure that it, its own international or its own national security, rather. And the way it does that is to ensure that it has the ability to strike the United States. You know, I think one of the things that we don't quite appreciate and we need to understand more is the North Korean perspective on the problem going, the problem at hand. It legitimately, well, you can disagree with its view, but its view is that the United States is a hostile country and that it intends to inflict harm on North Korea when it can. So for it to develop nuclear weapons in some ways makes a lot of sense, but that's not necessarily in using them. That's to ensure that it has them and that if there is any kind of an attack on North Korea, it will have the ability to respond. Now, that fits into the larger goals of North Korea by trying to split the United States and South Korean alliance. By developing these nuclear weapons, if it were to, say, attack South Korea in a more broad way, then it has created doubt that the United States will respond because now the U.S. is in fear of a nuclear retaliation.
Yeah, we don't want
so
to
there
get
is
into
some
that.
Of that going on, but mutually assured destruction for now seems to be holding.
It's nice to talk to you, Carl, North Korean expert over at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. I suspect I'll call you again. I appreciate your help this afternoon.
Thank you.
That's Carl Friedhoff.